your friend as a weapon, you know, beating other guys over the head. So it was a lot of fun. That's about it. I mean, I picked up the Conduit for the Wii, but I haven't got a chance to play it yet. You know, I've heard a lot of hype about this game, but I've also read some not so great reviews about the game. So I want to see what it's about, but I'll talk about that next month.
Cool.
When we talk games.
Hey, stay on the line, Kyle, and then, like last time,
stuff will happen.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Kyle von Kubik from Heroes of Gravitron. Check him out off the links on our We Talk Games site, WeTalkGames.com. Oh, my God. Keith, look at the time. Let's open up the lines. Nolan Bushnell, let's get him on here. Los Angeles, go! Nolan Bushnell on the line. Nolan, are you there? Can you hear me?
I can.
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Great.
Oh,
awesome.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people consider you the grandpappy, the pappy, the papa of the arcades, the founder of the video game industry. I like to think of you as the pioneer of the digital entertainment. Pong, Atari, first arcade video game machines, super successful cartridge-based console. But what gets overshadowed, I think, is by the innovation, which it was very innovative, is the business behind this innovation. Without that successful business end, who knows where we would have ended up?
Well, I think any kind of impact has to have a business model to go along with it, because otherwise you can't pay everybody's salaries and you can't pay the engineers, and you really have to have a finely crafted machine. And a lot of young entrepreneurs in the game business find that they're great technologists, but they don't get the business right and find that they struggle.
And you speaking of innovation, I mean, where did that early business model come from? The jacuzzi, the beer on tap, that type of model?
Well, we found that we had a very young workforce and that they loved to party as much as they loved bonuses. And we found that if we set a goal and hit the goal, we'd throw a party. And it was a very, very effective thing to do. And it created an environment that was, I think, very unique. And people responded to it. And people over the years have said working for Atari and Chuck E. Cheese was the best jobs that they've ever had.
You started Atari in 1970-something.
Well, we started the precursor called Syzygy in 1970, actually late 1969. And then when we decided to incorporate, we started out thinking we were just going to build games and license them to the big guys. And then somewhere along the line, we found ourselves in the manufacturing business and, you know, kind of next step, big company.
Sure, sure. I mean, all the documentaries, they've been on countless documentaries, some very good, very, very good documentaries that really draw you into this amazing story of the early years there. Most of them spend a lot of time on Pong, and for good reason, because, you know, but I'm very interested in hearing more about Computer Spaces. I mean, how'd that come about?
Computer Space was I fell in love with a game called Space War that we played on the university computers when I was in engineering school.
Right.
And I felt that if I took that game and could make it cheaply, that it would be successful. And so Computer Space was really aimed to create Space War in the coin-operated world.
I see.
And so I designed it in my daughter's bedroom, and you know, it was so much more complex than Pong that people often think Pong came first and Computer Space second. But no, we actually started with the hard one.
Yeah.
And Pong was actually, you know, literally a two-day project.
Wow. And Al, of course, was brought in on that. Was Ted around at that time as well?
Yes.
Okay, very good. And that was your company?
That's it. Ted was employee number two.
Okay.
Al was employee number three, and then we had a receptionist that was employee number four.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And you just thought, let's put this in a bar and see what happens.
Yeah.
And in a hopes, I guess, to pitch it to bigger companies, but then you ended up just doing it all yourself.
Exactly.
And then now you sold Atari in 76. But
correct.
Before then, I guess a lot of other things happened. Of course, everybody on my show wants to know about the game with the booby joysticks, the Gotcha, of course, in 1970. How did that come about?
we were just making stuff up as we were going along, and we thought that joysticks were considered phallic, so we felt that we should be an equal opportunity offender.
I see, I see. And why not mix that with some type of square chasing an X, like a car maze square X booby game?
Well, the you know, it turns out that doing a car with the technology in the time was very, very difficult.
Sure, sure.
And so it wasn't until, you know, I think late 74 that we were able to do a game called Grand Track that turned into Track 10, which was our first driving game.
Okay, okay. Were you only working in raster graphics back then, or were there some teams that were developing for the Vectrex?
We developed the Vector Graphics engine, which, I don't know if you've ever played the game Tempest, which incidentally is one of my all-time favorites.
Definitely.
Lunar Lander was in Vector Graphics.
Loved it.
And Vector Graphics gave you some interesting tools to give certain types of games that you couldn't do in raster graphics at the time. Of course, today you can do anything in raster graphics, but in those days it was very difficult.
And I never hear about how Atari did overseas. How was the market like in Japan or Europe?
We were a worldwide company. We actually started a company called Atari Japan.
Okay.
And found that we really couldn't manage it well. We were a young company. We didn't know what we were doing in a lot of ways. And so we ended up selling Atari Japan to Namco.
Uh-oh.
And Namco was a relatively small kiddie ride manufacturer at the time. And that sale to Namco put them on the map to become the company that they've become.
Yeah,
that we really got them into the video game business.
Wow, I did not know that. I you know, I'm not the type of interviewer that knows the answers to every questions and thinks this would be interesting. I want to know.
right.
Many early games in the arcade and in the early Atari 2600, you had to play them with another person. Was that something important? Well, I guess of course AI technology wasn't even a thought at that time, but was that important to have, you know, the camaraderie, that social interaction?
We felt that a lot of these games were designed, particularly in the coin-op space, to go into bars.
Okay.
And bars are convivial. The number of people that have said that they've met their husband or wife while playing Pong, it's probably been 1,000 in the years after, you know, when they meet me.
I see. I never thought of that. I guess that could happen. I always went there with my pop, so I guess I was already related to him. Now, speaking of that, brings something to mind, although this wasn't to play online, but the modem. Did you have anything to do with the 2600 modem and for game designers?
Oh, yeah. We really, in fact, I've often thought, I wonder if I were to go back and not sold to Atari, if we might have invented the internet a little bit.
Yeah.
Like we were going to do an online game using modems, and we actually had the patents on the fastest modem at the time that were ultimately sold off. But we had a 2200 baud modem in the 70s.
Wow.
That was going to be aimed to a telephonic game system.
Right on. Is there any gaming company that you really admire now?
Oh, I admire a lot of them. There's some really wonderful work done. I mean, you cannot play Halo without saying, boy, this is really, really good graphics, great response. Of course, I was a big fan of id Software and the pioneering work they did with Doom. And then, of course, the Warcraft series. I loved Warcraft and later on World of Warcraft, which, you know, really created a fun world, EverQuest. And I think BioShock is a game that I kind of like the world and the immersive nature, and of course the graphics is spectacular.
That's great. And of course now you're the CEO of Uwink and all that tap code business and stuff like that people might see in the local bars, and you did the Chuck E. Cheese. Nolan, I know that you got to get to. I know you got to get to a meeting, but I want to run down a couple of words here, and you tell me if you were involved with this or if you have any social commentary on it or anything like that. And I'll let you get off real quick. The 5200 cool. controller.
No involved at all. Okay. I hated that thing. I thought it was really screwed up.
Yeah, it was. It was overly complex for what it did. Were there any plans for the 5200 when you were still running Atari there?
Not really. We expected the Atari 400 to morph into the next gen video game platform.
Okay.
And the but we expected it to happen in like 1979 or 80 at least.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Warner just thought that they were making record players and that it was the software business. He didn't realize that the technology, in fact, the day we shipped the first 2600, I told Warner that, okay, now this game is obsolete. We've got to start on the next gen.
Right, right.
And they thought they thought I'd lost my mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And everybody knows that's exactly how it is in the technology industry now. Atari Force bundled with the system. Dudes in orange jumpsuits. Atari Force.
That was after I sold.
Right on. How about Stunt Cycle, the Atari model SC450?
Oh, boy. That was at the magic time that was just between Consumer Pong and the 2600, where we had some specialized games. Did pretty well, actually.
I love it. I still play it. The trick to it is you do it all by listening. When you listen, that's how you know that you can make the next ramp.
Yep.
Atari Pinball, Atari model C380, I guess that was another one of the interim games, as well as the tank games, I guess.
Yeah, those were great games.
I loved them. I loved them. Still relevant today, I think, if you could find one.
I think so.
Getting a royalty check anytime a sprite moves across the screen.
Yeah, there's some crazy things in the licensing world, and it's why the movie industry is populated with so many attorneys.
Sure. Was that your involvement, or was that the new Atari?
With the new Atari.
Okay, very good. Hey, Nolan Bushnell, anything that you want to leave our listeners with?
No, just keep playing and have fun. And it's very, very clear that the more you play games, up to a certain point, it keeps your brain agile.
Oh, yeah.
And so keep playing and have a lot of fun. And, the best is yet to come.
Hey, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule.
I appreciate it.
Bye now.
And give me a call, once a month. I'm more than happy to have a chat up.
Oh, fantastic. Well, then I won't have to rush through these.
Okay.
Really, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Bye now.
Bye now.
Wow, Nolan Bushnell. Did you hear what he said at the end there? Oh, my gosh. Nolan Bushnell on next month's show as well. And call me every... Stinky, you're out.
What the...
Let's open the lines, Keith. And it's Garthy Go!
Oh, God. All right.
What are you, 24 today now, John?
I would be 24, yes.
Fantastic. Now, 24-year-old gamer, it's a lot different than being a 23-year-old gamer?
Yeah, I hate everything I liked yesterday.
And now you like spinach all of a sudden for some reason.
Oh, I can't get it. Just like, I'm like the spinach while Kurt Cobain was the heroin, you know?
Uh-huh.
I just cannot get enough.
I just talked about him on a Wiggly World, but that's beside the point. Let's get to the games. What have you been playing lately?
Wrestling games.
Wrestling games.